as I like to call them. Just one note, next week, we will have a board meeting next week. It was a scheduling mistake. Normally, we have 2 weeks off in February, a week in between, but next week, we will be here on February the 15th, so please note that. All right, at this time, will you please join me in a moment of silence, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, it's time for the citizens' comments portion of our meeting, and we have one person for tonight. Well, Deb, will you please come forward, state your name and your address, and you can pull your mask down so we can hear you clearly.
Good. Hi, I'm Deb Reimers. My address is 145 Skyline Drive, New Holland. And I just wanted to speak to the board tonight. First off, to sing your praise, kind of, because I want to say I have nine grandchildren in the school district. And they are all so glad, and so are their parents, that you guys are keeping in-person school. It's really, really good for them, I think, to be in person. They do better. And I just thank the board very, very much for making sure that they could stay in school where they can learn better. And I will say sometimes I have too that it's very hard for them to do online. When they are out of school, it's hard for them to keep up with things. So, yeah, I sing your praises to everybody that you kept the school open and going the way it is. And from what I hear, Dr. Levine even finally feels that it's better for kids to be in school. So, funny thing, huh? Well, and I do want to tell you, I'm part of the Release Time Program at New Holland, and I like to keep that before you whenever I come and talk to you. We are doing online classes this year in order to work with the school to keep kids healthy and keep the schools open. So, but we're doing pretty good that way. We have about 24 kids participating, which is a lot less than we have for in person. But I'm pleased that 24 kids, because they're taking it upon themselves to do those online classes. So, we're looking forward to being back in person next year, though, too. So, while I'm here, I'd like to pray for you. And pray a blessing on you. Father God, I just thank you for this group of people. I thank you for the board and for the administrators and the teachers, Lord. And I just pray a special blessing over each of them, that you can keep them healthy and strong, and that they can move forward with wisdom and with your guidance as they go forward, Lord. I thank you, Lord, for this school district. And Lord, I just ask you to put protection around all the teachers and children as they're in school, that you keep them healthy and you keep them safe during this time, of this trying time that we know will pass, Lord. But we just ask your blessing on it. And thank you for this school district. Pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. And thanks for all you guys do.
Thank you, Deb, and for everything that you do in the community also. All right, at this time, we have the personnel report. Dr. Larkin.
There's really nothing overly special about it. We just appreciate everybody who works for us.
Okay, thank you. Do we have a motion for the approval of the personnel report?
So moved.
Been moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Properly moved and second. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Property and services.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. I do have two items for this evening. One will be an action item next Monday, and the other one's an information item. Regarding the action item, it's the approval of the change orders that were executed for the high school, middle school locker room and HVAC project. The one that I'll really reference, and it was one that we've talked about previously, is under the general contractor. There's a change order in there for $4,417. If you recall, when we did add the gym floor, in order for them to get the bleachers out where the press box is, they had to cut the bottom of the press box off so they get the bleachers out. And then after they put the bleachers back, they actually basically reconstructed and put the floor of the press box back on. So that change order is $4,417. The other change orders under electrical, there is no change. There's no amount, no cost implications, because they're all utilizing cost offset, utilizing the built-in allowances. So those are all zero. But you can kind of, they're pretty self-explanatory. Any questions or comments on any of those change order? We're actually nearing the end of the project, so we don't anticipate any more, or many more, if any. So other than that, I think I'll turn it over to Dr. Hollister and kind of share an update.
So we can talk a little bit about the project. It's on my part of the agenda under management, but I did want to give the board a little update on the HVAC renovations and the locker room area renovations in terms of progress. I can finally say we really do see the sort of the light at the end of the tunnel. We are technically supposed to be really finishing up this week, although there'll be some punch order items. One in particular was one that Mr. Walsh discovered along the way related to the showers and not having the actual shower head secured. They were sort of just a pipe coming through the wall. And if you know anything about plumbing, and if you know anything about teenage boys, they like to hang on pipes. And so that was going to, when those two merge, that's not a good situation. So the pipes are behind the wall. And so anytime one broke off, we would be tunneling into the wall. So Mr. Walsh came up with a plan and a plating system that we're going to put a way to secure those faucets. So that's going to hold us up a little bit. Neil, do you want to talk a little bit more about the timeline for that for me?
I mean, basically what we have to do is we have to make a custom plate. And essentially what's going to happen is the shower head is going to be coming out of the wall. Well, they won't have the ability to be able to break that off, or if they do, it will be on in a way that we would be able to fix it and not be. As I said to the architect, when I say the gym all the time, we respect things they need to respect, like jails. And I mean, essentially, that's what we're going to be doing. And it was a system that we had in our own lives. I by no means invented this. It's just something that has always worked, and something that you'll see common in any kind of shower area that's involved in the public, whether you're at the Y or a gym anywhere. It's something that we want to put in because I don't see it would last any other way, especially if you have even opposing team come in and have a very bad day. they like to take it out on fixtures. So we're just planning ahead here, make sure that doesn't happen.
And so the good news is we do have, you know, probably in reality a few weeks of punch order items, but we are bringing that whole project to conclusion. It was a difficult project in that COVID really interfered with chain supplies on a whole bunch of items. In fact, we would have been a little further down the road, but we're hung up on floor material right now, of all things. So that looks like it's going to get done this week. And so we're going to be in pretty good shape here in short order. Fortunately, you know, it wasn't a year where teams showered, so it's not like they were really missed. So it was, you know, sort of fortuitous that we bid all that off this year in conjunction with the COVID pandemic. The HVAC continues. They continue to poke and peck at that project, and that'll go on through the summer, I assume, Neil, with some of the bigger units that we need to drop in. But overall, we're happy that we are finally bringing all that to a close. And, of course, so I don't even know, Mark, who I know there was sort of like who was going to get on the floor first, but then there were snow days. So who actually got on the new floor first?
Wrestling.
Okay. I was like, it was like this. It was like the roulette wheel. Who was going to get to actually play first? I think first it was the girls, then it was the boys. And so wrestling is the one that ended up taking the ticket. So but the floor is open for business. So we're excited about that, too. I think that's all I need to say about the facilities at this point. Are there any questions on Neil or I or Keith can answer?
Can you remind me with the floor? Is that like open for business for good, or do they have to come back still?
So that's still a conversation that's ongoing and a lot of finger pointing. Fortunately, it's not us that fingers are pointing at. It's a three-way between the floor guy, the insurance guy, and the roofing guy. So we did a temporary fix, meaning we fixed the spot in the key that was cupped. But there are still some other areas of the floor that need some attention. So once the dust settles, we'll know more where that goes to, and we won't touch that again until this summer.
I was going to say thank you, Neil, for catching that with the showers. You know, you've done a great job of that with all our building projects, little things that could turn into major things that you nipped them in the butt before they got to the serious point. So
see,
thank you.
Neil still thinks like a teenage boy, and so he's able to catch a lot of that up front, you know. All right, thank you.
And as for your reference, attached is the change order log that the architect does for us, kind of give you an idea of all the change orders and kind of where we are as a percentage. And other than if you take the floor out, we're about 13% of our total contingency, which is amazing, which is excellent. And that's a kudos to Neil and his staff to really work hard and ensure. It definitely was a lot of planning involved. So again, kudos to Neil and his staff. Okay, moving on to the next, the information item. If you could bring up the report. We're actually pretty excited about this. You know, knowing that many districts have utilized the PA CoStars program, and for those that are not aware of what that CoStars program is, it's a buying co-op that the state provides. It's basically a predetermined preferential program for pricing by approved vendors, and it's actually administered through the Department of Governmental Services. And products under this program have already been pre-bid, and districts do not have to actually go through the formal bidding process. We actually reached out to a company called Field Turf, and this company has done many projects in the state. Locally, they've done Warwick, they've done Hempfield, they've done Manheim Township, they've done Penn Manor, they've done Pequay Valley. Also in the surrounding counties, they've done Wilson, Governor Mifflin, and in Lebanon County, they've done Palmyra and Cornwall, Lebanon. So they're really well known in the area, and they're actually the salesman's out of Westchester, so pretty much local. But we actually reached out. Jim Hawker with Dirk and Edson, who's here tonight, actually reached out to them and actually went through and provided them with our design and the drawings. And what you see on the screen, on the first column, if you look above the red line, and in the first column, this would have been the estimate that Jim would have provided back in June, where he provided an estimate of $2.2 million. Actually, the estimate he provided was from 2.1 to 2.3, so we took the average, 2.2. The track resurfacing slash replacement was estimated at $500,000, which would bring you to a construction cost budget of $2.7 million. And then the soft cost, which included 10% contingency, bonding, design fees, and permits, was really 20% of that construction cost number. So our total budget for the project was $3,250,000. We were pleasantly surprised that when we got the actual proposal back on February 4th from Field Turf through CoStars, you'll see that they came in at a construction cost of $2.2 million, which is almost $475,000 less than what we were budgeting or projecting. And the soft costs, we were able to, because we don't have to go through the formal bidding with the contracts and all those types of things, we dropped the soft cost percentage to 18% from 20%, which gave us $400,000. Now, again, that still includes 10% contingency on the construction costs. So that, in essence, is saving us $150,000. The total project cost savings, if we were to go with the CoStars program, would be just over $626,000. We talked with Chris Barnett and Jim Hocker. We were on a call with them today. And again, Chris, again, was very pleased. He never thought he would see those kind of numbers on the CoStars program. With that in mind, when you see the savings, there's some other things, you know, typical athletic director comes to you and says, hey, I don't think we should save all that money. No. So when you look under the red line, you'll see there's two options to consider. Right now, our lighting is the old-style ballast lighting, where, you know, I remember one time when the power accidentally went out to turn it back on. It took forever for the lights to come back on, you know, right before a game. But what we're looking to potentially do is to upgrade to LED lighting. They would use the existing poles, and they would just put light replacements on there. They would have to put some additional ones for some dark areas. We got a price from Musco, who is on the state contract. It's who our current lighting company is. And they proposed to replace those lights for $285,000. And as you know, LED lightings, they're about half the wattage usage than the typical lights that we have. So there is a payback period there, which is nice. In addition, our current scoreboard, it's about 11 years old. It's starting to, you know, fade a little bit. We're proposing that they would replace the scoreboard. It would be a digital LED scoreboard where we can do a lot of the stuff, put the team's names on and all those types of things on the scoreboards. This would also include a play clock, you know, basically for the football teams and those people as well that would need a play clock. So that's about $60,000. If you look at the total project costs in the yellow with the two options, we're just under $3 million. That would still provide us a savings of $281,700. One of the things that I've asked Jim and the architect to provide to us, and if you scroll down a little bit for the pros and cons, I asked them to provide a pros and cons from their perspective. And you'll see that they do have five pros, and a lot of these are really provide us as the owner control over the project. You know, suppliers already bid and been pre-approved for the turf and track product. So it's, even though we may not go through the formal bidding process, they still had to do some type of pre-bid, those types of things to get on the list. You know, we're the ability to lock in the cost now, which is under budget, able to get them on the schedule. We don't have to wait for the bids to come back in hopes that we get a lower bid. We could get a lower bid, but then all of a sudden, you know, would not be the vendor that we would want. They might sub everything out. And as you know, once you open the bids and award them, trying to get all those contracts in place and get everything on, they typically don't start on time. Ability, and with that in mind, we would have the ability to meet the schedule for this summer. It'd be our best option, in our opinion. The actual timeline for the project, we have track and the going until Friday the 14th of May. This project would go start the 17th of May, and we have it tentatively scheduled to be done, completed, substantial completion by August 20th. One of the things that we'd have the same company providing both the turf and track. Not a lot of companies do that. They have to sub one or the other. And then they have a successful record, as I shared with, and I received outstanding references from two of the districts that I spoke with, and they do have a presence and they have some experience. And some of those districts had multiple contracts with them, which is good. The cons, as I said, there's a slim possibility that a lower cost could be achieved through bidding. However, low bid contractor may not be best suited for the project. And then also competitors may say that they were not given the opportunity to bid. However, as I shared under the CoStars program, those products and services have already went through a pre-bid process. So again, wasn't sure if this would be an option initially, but when I think we just got into the market at the right time, and I think this is, we were all excited that the price came in so much lower. From our standpoint, we have put advertisements out. You know, we did kind of have both going, and we kind of did it simultaneously. There have been some interest, but what we would like to do is really provide an opportunity to let people know that we're going to go this route. And if the board is so inclined to proceed in that way, we'd like to have a motion this evening to authorize us to proceed. The other option would be to not proceed this way and then actually go through the bidding process and see what happens. But again, we're recommending that we go this route based on getting the company that we want and based on the nice cost savings and being able to get the additional options. Any questions, concerns, comments? Yes, I actually was on the phone with a solicitor today. Actually walked through. We actually had a call with the company, and we talked through some of the things on their proposal. I sent over the actual CoStar's backup for the company, and I got the thumbs up from the solicitor. So, yep, it is approved. I mean, it's in essence like we're doing a project. They're going to do prevailing wage. They're going to provide a payment and performance bond. They're going to do the background checks, all those types of things. So
pretty much seems like a win-win situation.
That's what
for once
about.
In these times.
Exactly.
Do we know how much how long the LED lights will last? What they're projected for?
Well, they gave us in their proposal a 25 payback period, if you will. So I would imagine that they would last 25 or so.
For 25.
Correct.
They warranty it for 25?
Yep. That's my understanding.
Warranty program includes maintenance for 25 years.
Almost 9 years ago.
Yep.
Those LED systems are less maintenance. You don't have to relamp them.
Right.
The LED bulbs just last much longer than
that. Yeah, they...
Musco is the company to have to do it.
Yeah, they're the big gorilla in sports field lighting for sure, and they just the technology is constantly improving, and they have a system where the controls, instead of physically going to the switch, running around like crazy to get things on and off, you can control it with an iPad, and you can program.
Yeah, the other thing with the LED lighting is you have less stray light. The glow that you see if you drive around the county on a Friday night, you can find football fields really far away, quite literally. It's kind of fun to see. It's such a Friday night thing.
Yeah.
Friday night lights. There'll be a little less glow around New Holland because the light really is directed to the field. In fact, that's why Keith mentioned they'll have to install some additional lighting on our concessions and bathroom areas because we count on the ambient light from the field to light those areas, and they won't be lit. So we're actually going to add a little more lighting.
Is there an anticipation for it not being done in time for football season and what we would do?
Yeah, that's always the big question. It's scheduled to be done by August 20th. So we should have enough time to at least have a field for a game. Ideally, we'd want the players on the field for a little bit before they run a game. I think part of what we're doing here, these guys presented this to me. I was on the call at 1 o'clock today, and I think we were all really pleasantly surprised that CoStars was a big win here. I think this is a no-brainer. I think we go with CoStars because of the most important part of the whole – well, not the most important part. One of the key pieces of information that – that you may have gotten lost when Keith was presenting was the fact that this shortens the timeline for this whole project because we don't have to do the bidding process and the arguing and the specking and all that stuff. We're ready to go. Mr. Ramsey did contact several business managers in the area who we have good relationships with, very trusting relationships, who've installed fields with these folks, and they were very happy, extremely happy with the quality, the interaction, the process, and everything. So it's like someone said, it's a rare occasion, but it's all falling together. It seems like we've hit a lot of roadblocks in the last year, but this is one of those occasions where it seems to fit.
Would any consideration for if the work's already being done and we're upgrading the lighting, putting lights on the football practice field, the overflow parking lot, the lacrosse practice field area? There's two lights there currently. It's not sufficient lighting for any kind of practice to happen in the evening.
We hadn't considered that, but we can certainly pull together a spec and see if that's possible.
Yeah,
it's not a bad idea.
mean, if they're going to be putting new poles in anyways,
We might even be
the groundwork's going to be getting done no matter what. So,
well, and with the big with the direct lighting that LEDs, we might be able to fire light from the big poles over.
We're not putting new poles in. They're going to use our existing poles.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But maybe potentially we could put them on the backside.
We could put. I'm thinking we could put some on the backside of the poles
to take care of that.
We'll that's a good suggestion. We'll take a look at that.
Is there lighting over there in the parking lot area right now?
Very little. I think there's two.
There's two poles. There's one on Grandview, and there's one in the back corner by the baseball field.
Yeah. Additional lighting there would be a positive thing.
We can definitely talk to them.
It might be worth just looking into. I think there might be requirements for lighting in parked areas at night. So we had to look into that for our church.
Maybe it's not technically a parking lot. I think we just
use it as
overflow parking.
I'm just saying it's a gray area, so it might be worth just looking into it.
We'll look at that. That's a good idea, especially with the directive, with the lighting, the way it can be directed. That might be worth looking at.
That's your test.
Just a quick question I had. Above the red line, obviously, I like lower numbers. Below the red line, in terms of the LED upgrade and the replacement scoreboard, I would feel more comfortable just getting another bid on it, at least, just to make sure that number's in check, especially around the scoreboard, unless you're confident that this is the cheapest we can get. But I would...
Eric, so the scoreboard's through CoStar, and that place the scoreboard includes, like, installments, too?
Sure, I just mean in terms of due diligence, to make sure it's... I don't know if that's a good number or a bad number. I have no idea, because I have nothing to compare it to. Is that possible? To me, it makes sense because I mean.
Yeah, I went through Nemco, which is what we use now. So I just wanted to them to get the same controllers and their wireless and all that stuff.
We try to go with the existing companies. Like for Musco is the current lighting that we have now, the company, and they're on CoStars and this will be CoStars pricing. And then for the scoreboard, you know, Mark did try to do the same thing, and it's also through CoStars, but. I mean,
so
we could check
you're
other
comfortable
ones if
with
you'd
it.
Like.
I think we can do better than that number on the scoreboard, and just say that number included the play clock, which is a requirement that's coming in for football, as I understand. So two play clocks on either side. There's no power to that point of connection now. But you need one on the opposite side of the field as well. So there's some wiring and electrical work in that number.
But yeah, we can also check into it, see what else is out there. Some options. Sounds good.
Is the board comfortable moving forward this evening? If so, I would need a motion.
You have a motion.
Been moved. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Been properly moved and second. And just further discussion. So we're going to be checking into the
scoreboard
John brought up about this.
If we can find a cheaper scoreboard, we'll put that in there.
I'm not saying cheaper. I'm saying the right scoreboard.
Yeah, okay.
Make sure. I don't want a piece
Mr.
of
Dahl.
Like, I want something.
Mr.
Good.
Dahl is being very specific in his word choice.
That's good.
An equal replacement for less cost. I understand.
I'm just making sure the price isn't. We're getting not getting robbed. That's all. I think just
good.
For our due diligence. And just to be clear on the motion, was that to accept the whole thing with? Those options or just
Paul,
the
was that
line?
To accept the whole thing, the whole proposal?
The whole proposal.
Did that include the additional lighting, to look into the additional lighting for the parking lot or the grass that we use as a parking lot?
No, that's going to be a separate item.
Okay.
We have to get a price on that and to know if we have to put poles up. Well, we've got to do that, so I consider that a whole separate.
That's, can approve
once
that
we
later.
Get those pricings, we'll bring those back to you at another meeting.
So we're just looking to approve the project cost of the track and
the field.
Not the scoreboard or the lighting at this point. And is that okay to do with them?
My motion includes the scoreboard and the lighting.
Well, then I guess my question would be, what would be the point of getting other costs if we're approving it today?
Well, we're approving that amount of money if we can get it at less.
Copy that.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Yeah.
Approving it for the lighting upgrade for the stadium, the additional would be the parking lot lacrosse field, so that would be a separate item, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Any further discussion? All right, everybody clear in what we're voting for? All right, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, everyone. That ends my report.
All right, at this time, program.
Good evening. We have one action item for next week, and that is the policy 251 for homeless students. This is the second and final reading for that policy. And you've got that last month. Any questions? Okay. And then I just have a couple of information items just to keep you updated. We did meet as a program committee prior to this meeting to begin looking at the Pathways and Academy that we are Pathways and Academy programs, not necessarily a program, but a way of instruction, an instructional model. And we just wanted to make sure the program committee understood what that was. It's a very preliminary look at it. And when we have it a little more fleshed out, we will be bringing it to the board for you to look at as well. But I did want you to know we met as a program committee. We are also working on remediation programs that we're going to put in place, especially at the secondary level, for those learners that had difficulty passing their courses the first semester. So we'll be bringing those to you probably in the beginning of the first meeting in March. Okay. On the good news, we have 106 kindergartners that have already been registered or started the process, contacted us to get started for the process for next year. We did open our registration earlier this year, and we also have changed things a little bit. We're going to be much more individualized in how we meet them, given the pandemic and everything else. But Alice Irwin, who you met earlier this year when she presented, is really doing a very nice job of connecting with parents and families and giving them information on getting started with registering for kindergarten next year, and also providing them with a lot of materials that will help keep kids engaged as they get ready for kindergarten. Okay. And last but not least, I don't want you to think we've forgotten the sign language course. We have started looking into that. And to see what we would need to do, who we could possibly have instruct that. And so Kara Martin and I will move forward with that and be back to you with recommendations shortly.
I have one question on kindergarten, Dr. Larkin. Is it, do you envision that it's going to be the same as it was this year with the parents having the half-day option and the full-day option, or are they going to be full day?
We prefer full day, but as always, if a parent is very wanting a half-day program, we can make that work. We did it this year. We had about five or six.
I was going to say it's a relatively small number. Small. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Any other further questions for Dr. Larkin?
I just want to ask, how did the teachers feel about having both options running simultaneously? Have they made any comments, good or bad, as far as, I don't know, feedback from elementary?
Right. I haven't heard any good or bad about it. It seems like we've figured out how to make it work if we have to. Heard a lot of good things about the full-day program, though. It really gets a lot, gives them more time.
Yeah, I was just thinking with only having the interest being less than 1% of our kindergartners. It was just kind of something, if it's extra work for our staff, I just would like to keep that in mind, that maybe we consider eliminating it if it becomes more stress or more work for our staff members because it's such a low percent of the population that's interested currently.
As of right now, I don't know of anybody from next school year that has asked for that.
We'll keep the board apprised of that. If you guys want to take that on at some point, we'll give you numbers and keep you updated if we do have half days, if any. It's good to keep track of that.
All right, thank you. Mm-hmm. Management, Dr. Hollister.
Thank you, Mr. President. One action item for next week, it's an MOU. We have been working on this MOU for months. It seems like, it's been months. It's been 2 months at least. This MOU is essentially a description of what we are currently doing with teachers here, actually with support staff members as well, in terms of their working from home, if they themselves are quarantined, if their children are quarantined, or if there's some issue with the classroom that they're conducting. This protects both sort of the teachers and the association as well as the school district. We were advised by our solicitors to go ahead and proceed with an MOA, and PSEA is advising our local association to proceed with an MOA, there is a mutual understanding of the rules under the current situation, and then the fact that we will regress back to the old set of rules once we're through the pandemic. And that's what this MOU articulates. Again, it's just a description of what we're currently doing. So I'll look for action on that next week. Are there any questions about that? Okay. Item C, I just want to make sure the board understands the plan going forward for the remainder of the school year related to our virtual days and weather emergencies. I did explain this in a communication to families last week. The thought is that we have one makeup day remaining, and that's the Friday in June. It's a scheduled snow makeup day. We would use that next if we would lose another day of school due to weather. And then after that, we would make use of virtual days the way we've been doing them when we have to flip over to remote learning during a COVID spike. And that's how we would proceed. Going forward, we'll look at this and make some decisions when things return to normal about what virtual days look like and what snow days look like. Honestly, I've gotten positive feedback for having a snow day so far. I do think that that'll get old. I think folks are ready to make that switch. I think folks have had enough of snow days. We've had three already. And I think we're ready to start looking at virtual. So I think it's been a good balance. I think folks really appreciated the time off on a snow day, both teachers and learners. But I do think that, like often happens, we're starting to wear out on winter weather, and just want to make sure we close the school year on time, which we'll do if we proceed with this plan. Any questions or comments about that? Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I know your communications, talked about the desire to avoid it if we could initially, especially with our special needs learners. What's the thought there, just moving forward, if we get to that spot where we need to go or desire to use our virtual days? How do we handle those circumstances? How do we make sure those students still get what they need?
And that's an ongoing challenge, and it's a cost-benefit balance. It's not going to be any different for our special needs students on a shift or a virtual day than it currently is, so we've got no additional provisions in place. I do think that we will have to avail ourselves to some extended learning for some of those students this summer, but we're going to be doing that with some of our regular education students as well. I think summer school, as the traditional term, that we if you use the traditional term, will be a little bit more robust this summer and with more learners across the board. So, I think we're going to have both regular education and special education in some extended school year situations. That's the most fair thing we can do for them, I think.
If Monday ends up being a snow day, how does that work?
Say it again, John.
If this coming Monday
happens
to be a snow day as well, because this is going to be a makeup day.
Right, yeah. So,
does one get...
Yeah, so it gets pushed again. So interestingly, this week, and this is sort of the second part of this conversation. We have an early dismissal day scheduled for Wednesday and Thursday of this week, and we have a teacher and service day scheduled for Friday. If for some reason we need to be delayed 2 hours on Wednesday or Thursday, what I intend to do is cancel the early dismissal and have a full a 2 hour delay day. I'm going to communicate that to parents tomorrow, assuming that the board's okay with that, and so that they can make plans for that event. We're supposed to have snow tonight. We're supposed to have snow Wednesday night, Thursday night, this week, and Sunday night. So it's a miserable week. I'm speaking for myself when I'm tired of winter, but this week it's official now. I'm looking forward to spring. So that's what I think we'll do so we don't lose. It would be silly to have a two-hour delay and then get out early dismissal. That just wouldn't make any sense at all. So I've already talked to Mr. Walsh to prep his transportation fleet that we would be making some changes to the schedule this week if that would happen. As far as Monday is concerned, back to the original question, if that would be a snow day, then we would make that snow day up. That would be our last snow day on June 4th. And then we would flip to virtual after that. Okay. Any questions on that?
Quick question. That you said something that kind of maybe ties to Dr. Larkin's comment that maybe you're bringing back. Has there been an excessive amount of people who have failed classes then from first semester? I mean, you mentioned something to that. I mean, is it an excessive compared to years past? Yes. I would think so, but...
Do you want me to...
Go ahead.
Yes, it is larger. It's still... The larger numbers are still people that are here in person than IPR. Now, granted, there aren't as many IP in-person remote learners as there are in-person learners, but the number is larger.
What's the percentage, in-person. Though?
The percentage?
Yeah, like, you know, feeling.
It's almost doubled.
Almost doubled. Dr. Larkin, almost double the number of failures that we normally have. And that's not a surprise.
And you think that's directly contributed to the chaos of the last year?
Yeah. I would say that trend is coming across the state as well as other states as well.
So if you think about, you know, and we've said this from day one, that this wasn't going to be the same type of service in terms of learning from day one, because you got to think the continuity of learning is disturbed almost regularly with kids being quarantined, with teachers being quarantined. You know, there's so much disruption, and that doesn't even talk about, you know, any family disruption of people getting sick or whatever. So it's just been a year of huge distractions. So even some of our best students are struggling, and it's not a surprise, and it's a big issue. And as Mrs. Geyer noted, it's an issue across the state. I mean, there's not anybody who's doing great. Having said all that, I still am extremely proud, and I've said this so many times, but it's so true. I'm so proud of all of the groups of our organization. I really think we've done the very best we can given the hand that has been dealt to us. And, you know, as I've said before, I'm ready to recognize one group in particular, and then I go, I can't hardly do that without going to another group and another group. And another. Like, everyone has just done their job so well, you know, from transportation to our cafeteria. Like, you just can't stop, you know, technology. You just go on and on. As well as our teachers and administrators. So it's not been a great year for our learners, but I think it's been as good a year as it can possibly be given what we've been dealt. So, but the failure, I talked to Dr. Larkin, and I've actually talked to her multiple times, trying to come up with a better remediation plan and starting it now as opposed to waiting in the summertime, which we're doing. We're starting that remediation plan now, not waiting till summer. Okay. All right. Where am I here? Just a reminder then, information item there. If you're interested in attending the Zoom meeting with Senator Aumit, that is on February 26th at 9 a.m. I'm planning to attend. That's a meeting he conducts every year. Every year you get that invitation. You're certainly welcome to pipe in on that. A couple other items here. I just wanted to talk to the board a little bit more. Mr. Schaefer's here, and you know, we've managed to limped through a winter season, but we've been doing it. So we have about 2.5 weeks left of the season proper, and we've had some pretty good success. Wrestling is doing extremely well, as is rifle. Bowling and basketball, girls basketball struggling this year. Boys basketball is about 500. So with 2.5 weeks to go, there's some reasons to be excited about our winter season. And then so far, and you know, we haven't had to quarantine. The learners have really kept themselves healthy and follow the rules. So we're fortunate, and congratulations and thanks to Mark for, you know, doing everything he's done to make kind of a gnarly season with short on space make it work. So just a little bit of a kudos there. And then finally, a kudos to our teachers. This Friday is an in-service day, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, and we're looking forward. They're attending professional development activities through the intermediate unit. The intermediate units, IU13 is hosting a conference, and our folks are attending. And they're looking ahead. It's not about COVID. It's really about what happens with technology and some of the things that we can do now looking forward. So the district in general, we're trying and starting to look forward beyond COVID and so that we can hit the ground running here in a few months. And then finally, the last thing I have is just a short conversation with the board. We'd like to conduct a board retreat, as I mentioned to you, in an email, and I just wanted to make sure we're all on the same page about what we want to try and take on and look for a little bit of input, and we can do a little bit of this through email, but a couple of the questions that I would have, and the board's welcome to chime in on these things. You know, how soon do you want to try to meet? My preference would be to meet when we can take masks off and be closer in a room, so my preference would be in a couple months or maybe this summer to do that. Question number two is, do you want to go all day on a day, or do you want to try to do two evenings? I do think from a subject ideas, you know, I do think some team maintenance and some team exercises and roles and responsibilities would be helpful to us, communication. And the suggestion from one board member, and I agree, typically I run these retreats. I've always run them for the board. And I think I would like to be more of a participant this time and be a part of the team of 10. And so I would do less facilitating. Certainly I would be hosting and organizing and preparing, but I'm leaning towards bringing in outside folks to facilitate those conversations. We can talk about how far in depth you want to go with the team maintenance stuff. And we can do sort of the surfacey things, you know, just sort of get to know one another a little bit better and, you know, what drives one another. Or we can actually have a professional come in and really do an analysis of your leadership style and one of the many profiles that are out there. So there's some of the questions that I would throw at you. The second piece of a retreat that I think would be important from the board seat, from the vision setting seat that you have, is to really go back and revisit that conversation on the information that we talked about on race and equality and equity in our curriculum and what we're doing here in the district. That's a big apple, and there's a lot of bites we would need to take out of that apple, but I think the first one would be important to have. You know, Lord knows there's many, many things we could pick to pull out and talk about. There's so many things, but I do think that's an important one. So I think the board should consider that. And again, we would bring outside folks in to help facilitate that conversation. So I'll stop talking. I'm just curious about what your thoughts might be for some of those pieces.
I'll go first. I think it's a great idea. I like the idea of getting somebody, a third party or another resource outside or internally to help facilitate. I would say that I agree about the idea of doing face-to-face, in person, no masks, except a lot of what I'm hearing currently is that probably won't be till the end of the year anyways. So I don't know that we want to wait that long. So if it's not going to be until December or January of next year, then maybe sooner rather than later would make more sense. And then the only other thing I would say is that, like, a lot of people tend to scatter over the summer. So trying to do multiple days could be challenging. If we could all come to an agreement of, like, one day and do a large session, that might be better, in my opinion. That being said, I have a lot of flexibility in my schedule, so that could not be the consensus. So.
Thanks, Brian.
I agree with everything Brian said.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay. So, if there's other thoughts, I'll take them. Why don't I pitch something and then pitch a couple date ideas and see how that falls out. I agree, Mr. Ronho. I'm proud of being optimistic that we're going to be able to take these off. You know, maybe if we all get our jab, if everyone takes one, maybe then. But we probably will be masked for this. And I agree, we can't wait till December. This is the team, and we want to hit the ground running coming out of the pandemic. I don't want to be just moping around licking our wounds. I want to run, and I want us to be together on that. So I'll throw something back at you with some ideas for dates, and we can just prioritize from there. Any other input before we move on? Okay. Any interest in, like, having a professional profile? I know DISC is one that we use for our administrators. Any others out there that you're interested in, or we don't want to go to that level of sharing? Okay, I'll add that to the questionnaire for the board, and we'll get a feel for if you want to be psychoanalyzed for your leadership. See your leadership potential now that you're on the board.
Okay. Well, I have to say, we did the DISC assessment at Leadership Lancaster, and it was very interesting.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So the DISC is one I'm familiar with. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. You guys
that's
do
what
that.
They use the
Leadership Lancaster does the DISC. That's right.
Yeah.
We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, whenever that was. But I mean, I think it's a great idea. I think there are a lot of them that don't tell you anything except the things that you already know. You read their profiles and you read their reports, and they tell you exactly what you knew. Maybe you just didn't write it down in 18 pages worth of information. So I think there's value to it. You just would have to decide, or we as a group would have to decide, what we're trying to get out of it, because I don't need a binder that tells me what my personality is. I think each one of us has probably taken 3 or 4 versions of this test already. So if there's a way we can use the information or come up with an expectation of what we'd like to get out of the information, I think that could be valuable. I am partial to one called Predictive Index, because I think as a design, it helps you do that. But that being said, there are a lot of them out there. So.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll pull something together and send that back out to you. And then we'll, at some point, we're going to have to make some decisions, vote just yes, no, I can do this, I can't do that, and we'll see where we end up. All right, thank you so much. I believe that's all I have for my report. Just a reminder, as Mr. Wenzel said, we do have our meeting scheduled for next week. It's been on the calendar. All of the calendars had that meeting scheduled to be next week, so we'll meet next week.
Okay, are there any other... information or items that would like to be brought before the board tonight?
Just one other one, an announcement that we do need an executive session after the meeting for a personnel matter.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Navy. One quick question, and maybe this is premature, Dr. Hollister, but are there any plans specifically yet for graduation, or are we still too
soon? Yeah, too soon. I'm optimistic that we'll have something a little more normal, but the longer this goes without vaccines, the less optimistic I get. Quite honestly, I really thought in early January we would all have our first stick by now. I really did. So that's making me less optimistic. So, no, I don't have any plans yet.
What about the spring play musical?
Has that been talked about at all?
You know what? I haven't heard anything, but I'll find out.
Of course, the other big one is prom.
Also find out. Thank you.
I've got one question for the board. When it comes to a couple of months ago, I was going to bring up the attestation that was signed. We never really did discuss that and wanted to discuss that to see whether or not it is something, and I know it was signed, but whether we would retract that signature of it and what that would actually mean, whether we should have signed it or not, whether that was something that was forced upon us at a time where we weren't even in session or in school because it was during vacation time, during the Thanksgiving break, and what that could mean.
As far as the attestation is concerned, I don't have any problem with signing that. I mean, I sign reports and sign off on things all the time as a superintendent. Specific to the attestation, I don't honestly think that I would be doing anything any differently. In other words, that attestation hasn't made me do anything that I wouldn't have done in the name of safety anyway. The new pieces that were put into place with the attestation actually gave school districts more flexibility because of the asterisks on the matrix chart. Now, I will tell you that 2 weeks ago they made an adjustment to that, and so we're still waiting to see where that falls out. We were on the phone today with Pennsylvania Department of Education representatives, and they indicated that some changes would be coming potentially next week to the matrix, the decision chart that talks about closing, and that it would be more flexible and create more pathways for schools to keep their learners in session. So, you know, that's sort of where I am with the attestation. I honestly don't have a real problem with following it, at least as I understand it. I should put that caveat in there. Because, as you all know, there's so important pieces of information are buried sometimes deep in some of those documents, or there are attachments to attachments to attachments, and you literally have to tunnel into all that. But honestly, Mr. Conroy and members of the board, I think the attestation has been doable. I did check. Two pieces of information that I think are important. One is every school district in the Commonwealth did sign, and to our knowledge, no one has retracted it. The other piece of information I think is also important that was revealed today by PDE. There are 40% of the LEAs in the Commonwealth. Now, an LEA is a school district, not 40% of the students, so it's not like it's Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. 40% of the LEAs haven't had a day in school yet this year, and that's a problem for the Commonwealth. But it also highlights how well we've done here as a school district. You know, we've only lost a total of, I think we're about 23 or 25 days shifted across the school district. So, with that,
and I didn't mean to think that you would have done anything different. I think you've done a phenomenal job considering. I just thought it was something that I opposed personally and thought it was something we should not have done as a board. But again, that would have to have come to a board vote at that time, which we didn't because of what the governor did by pushing it onto us at that time. And so I'm not saying that it's because, oh, maybe you did something. No, not at all. I'm looking at more on the board stance of that we as a board were not able to make that decision as a board and thought, why shouldn't we? Whether everybody still agrees and I'm the only one that thinks we should not have and still would say that, not that it would change anything in how we have acted, but we would be able to act on our own without having something signed.
Is your opposition to it the fact that it was forced upon us, not necessarily what was in it?
I think it holds more ramifications to if we chose to deviate some from what is recommended,
I'll go the opposite direction than most think I would go. If we said instead of four students in a building that have to have COVID, we shut this still building down. Mm-hmm. If Dr. Hollister brought some evidence to say we really need to limit that to three cases and we need to shut down, then that allows us to do that. Now, I'm not saying the attestation doesn't right now, but what it does do is if we went the other way to say four is kind of pushing it, really we could put that to five or six and be okay, considering the middle school and high school as an example, as one building. And I don't know whether we have or not discussed that part of it specifically. But if, again, if we did think that, we could do that as a board, still maintaining some integrity, mm-hmm. but with the attestation, we are saying, nope, it's four, without a doubt, 100%, because we signed something saying that we will do exactly what is recommended, not a law, not a mandate, but a recommendation. So that's my problem with it, more than it being forced upon us, though I don't like that either.
Any other further comments?
I mean, I don't have any further comments about that. I do have other questions that aren't related to that, though. Is this now an appropriate time?
Yes.
There is two, I guess, COVID questions. Let me ask both questions, and then you can give me both answers. One is if a paid staff is suspected of having COVID, thus the class is quarantined or whatever, are they required to get a COVID test in a certain amount of time? Then the second question is, if a student is COVID positive, we know that, we documented it, they come back to school and are in the vicinity of someone else, do they have to quarantine again, knowing they tested positive already?
I don't know the. We're debating over here the second question, without anyone seeing. The first question is, we can't force anyone to take a COVID test. Okay. And we can't force anyone back sooner than we like. For example, there are some faculty members presently who are exercising their right to the full 14 days, and that's leaving us short.
Sure.
But we don't have the ability or the authority
to can't do anything
them.
Contractually.
Okay. And that's unfortunate because it's really, in some cases, some critical folks who are not doing that.
Well, the situation that I'm in, that I'm aware of is a student had to quarantine because they were around a probable. 10 days later, the student was able to get back to school. The same day we found out the test came back negative. So it was a waste to be out.
Right, I understand.
Which also means that faculty or staff delayed getting a COVID test because we know COVID tests are coming back in 2 days, three right. days at the most.
Right.
So just math is telling me students aren't necessary. This particular faculty or staff didn't take it right away. It's a little disconcerting. But if we can't do anything about it, obviously we can't.
I don't disagree with you, but we can't.
Sure. I was just curious.
No, it's a fair question. It continues to be a challenge to staff our buildings, and that's, it's another one of the contributing factors to why our students aren't doing as well this year, especially in our special education classes. I sound like a broken record, but just by the nature of those classes where faculty members are working close with the kid, they're getting it. And they're being quarantined many, many, many times. So, again, I've said it all along. We're doing as good as we can
Absolutely.
Do. Everyone's stepping up.
But it
is not a normal year, and it's not normal learning.
And then as far as my second question, if someone is COVID positive, do they have to quarantine again? Because science shows they would have antibodies.
We're saying no. They have, that's right. There's a 90-day rule on those guys. Yeah.
All right.
They're good for 90 days. Thank you.
Thanks.
John.
Is the 90-day rule thing from the state or from the CDC?
CDC.
Or is that just?
I believe that CDC passed through the state as well.
Okay.
I think a couple of things, even with what you just said on the CDC part of it, which is we could change that if we didn't sign the attestation. And then the other piece would be
the first
situation as far as when quarantine, how they quarantine, how many days they quarantine and everything, because, again, that's recommendations.
Got it.
And the other part of the CDC, which I agree, that's a CDC thing in 90 days. But, again, I look at it and say, who are we really following? CDC, Department of Health, WHO? I mean, pick one because they're all different, right? And, again, sure. Logically, I think the 10 of us specifically in here – can logically and educatedly say, hey, this is what we need to do. And again, not to say that you would change anything you've done, Dr. Hollister. That's not what I want to say. It's just a matter of, I do think that attestation specifically binds us to specific things that are said, not from us having common sense.
I want to bring up what you mentioned, your first concern. That is not something I thought of. I would have thought that somebody working with children or in a facility like a school would immediately, just out of pure ethics, go and get a test so they could notify the children and the children's families immediately. I guess I'm kind of shocked to hear that we can't necessarily require one. I get that. But then I feel like perhaps we're creating an environment with all the leniencies we have for our staff right now that if I were to work here, I could see why I would not immediately go get a COVID test. I feel like maybe we created that problem a bit. Is there a way that we could perhaps, you know, maybe after three sick, I don't know, we need to figure out something because like right now from what you described, there would be no reason for a staff member to get a test at all. Because we're providing them with the extended FFCRA days, we're putting subs in the classroom, we're not really, I guess I'm looking at that as, why would you then?
Well, that's just it. I mean, I would take 14 days off. Like, and I get they're not all taking the day off. I get they're probably teaching from home or whatnot, but it's just, I guess, more frustrating as a parent. It was my kid, obviously.
Yeah. I'm actually so very frustrated hearing this.
More frustrating. You know, at my work, if I'm out for more than 3 days, I'm required to have a doctor's note, or they're you can get fired for that. So I have to see a doctor within 3 days. So we have no policy like that for any teacher or faculty.
That's what I was wondering. Don't we need some type of documentation after 3 days? Or is there any like set amount of days that there would need to be something to prove that they are still probable? They have it's like I don't know. I'm not comfortable with what I'm hearing.
Well, I know that we can't legally do anything as far as requiring it. I'm wondering if is there anything that we can do to incentivize a teacher or a staff person taking a test, positive or negative, seeing a test result, as far as rewarding them for getting it. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there.
I wasn't necessarily looking for an answer tonight. I guess it's more of just a frustration that I'm experiencing.
Well, and so you need to understand the MOU. You should read the MOU that we, because this outlines all of this. So if you're not comfortable with that, you need to vote accordingly next week.
Yeah. Because even with like students in normal time, if they have more than 10 days, they have to have a doctor's
note. Right.
Vote.
Yeah. And so these are all extenuating circumstances. Obviously, we do have protocols for teachers who continue to be out a lot and always out on a professional development day. We have all that covered. This is an extenuating circumstance, which is why we have the MOU. So that we don't set a precedent that this is the new norm. Mm-hmm. That's the whole purpose of the MOU, is that this is a temporary moment in time. I will reflect on that between now and next week. I'm not sure there's an easy way to pare that out, so to speak.
I mean, the MOU says an individual is temporarily self-quarantined based on an advice from a healthcare provider. Like, it can't be self-diagnosed, basically.
Yeah.
School nurses. They're the folks who are making those decisions.
So, hypothetically, as a professional staff, I could go to the nurse and say I don't feel well and get 14 days off.
Sure. And so there is a point at some point here where we've got to count on people's integrity.
Absolutely, 100%.
And it's not being widely abused.
No.
We've had a few
only a few who've done that. So we've got to be careful we don't make a rule for everyone.
It's true.
That really is only because of a few people, less than a half dozen,
sure,
in the course of the year, who've not really worked with us.
Please, no one listening to this, hear me that I'm questioning our teachers' motives. Broadly speaking, I'm not at all.
It's hard to pare that out without hurting what we're trying to get accomplished, and that being, because I need to say this too. We've had a whole lot more teachers teach while they were sick at
sure.
home
than they probably should
be. Than we've had teachers at home who had no symptoms but were quarantined.
Sure.
So let's make that point too.
Yeah.
Far more. there are a lot of teachers teaching through glassy eyes and hoarse voices. So okay. let's keep that in mind.
So the state has a document for this exact circumstance. The Department of Labor uses it for all state employees. It's a document that actually I know a lot of employers are using that sort of is that documentation piece where an employee, or in this case a faculty member or whatever, would have, they'd only qualify for paid days under the Federal CARES Act if they're doing one of two things, and that's if they have advice, written advice from their personal medical care provider that says that they need to quarantine, or if they are awaiting the results of a test. Those are the two circumstances where they qualify, and then a positive test or a probable exposure qualifies them potentially for the rest of the FCRA days. So there is a document that exists for that. I should not have assumed that we were utilizing something of that nature without mentioning it. So
I did assume we were using that, actually.
Dr. Hollister, go ahead.
I need direction from the board. What do you want us to do?
The reason I raised it was more of just a curiosity question because I didn't know what we were doing. I wasn't necessarily looking for direction, but I hear otherwise maybe.
And I'm not trying to say necessarily staff. I'm very concerned about how this is affecting the students, because if a staff member is not getting tested, then all those students are out of their classroom longer than maybe they need to be. And that's where I think as a board we do need to step in, because that's not okay. It's one thing if the staff member is only exposing other staff members and they don't want to get tested, but once they start exposing the children, I think we need to use documents like this that Brian mentioned. We need to use things because it's not fair to the students, in my opinion.
But wouldn't a school nurse telling that teacher that they have to go home and quarantine be their personal provider?
Generally speaking, no, because that nurse would not give them their prescriptions. That nurse would not see them in a medical emergency. So I don't know that would qualify, but I certainly...
If they have a headache here at school, they go to the nurse, the nurse takes care of
them. Yeah, but the same way if a student goes to see the nurse, that nurse tells them, go see your family doctor and bring us back their note. That nurse doesn't say, go home for 5 days. She said...
I'm under the impression that our school nurses are LPNs, and I do not believe that an LPN, maybe I'm wrong about their certification.
Our nurses are certified school nurses,
right.
RNs.
They're RNs.
Yes, we do have some staff nurses that are LPNs, but nurses are RNs.
Okay, so they can qualify then to...
They send a letter home with the students, and they also send a letter home with teachers, telling them their options and telling them that they strongly recommend that they go see their doctor.
Okay.
That gets sent home with every child that gets sent home and every staff member that gets sent home.
Right. So if they're saying to go see your doctor, then they're not considering themselves as the primary care physician is what I was trying to say. If they're suggesting you go see your primary care physician, they're not saying, I'm the primary care physician, so I'm saying you...
But that is correct. That's not what they're saying.
Primary care. It's a personal.
I would not quote the verbiage I'm using, because I certainly did not create the document. But
My question would be of any of the staff that went to the school nurse and was asked strongly to go and get tested, or do you know of any that refused to get tested?
I don't think we can know the answer to that, because
I don't know offhand. I would have to dig into our data.
I mean, that's what it's basically coming down to. You know, I mean,
most faculty members are doing just the opposite. They're doing everything they can to get back in front of their kids, because in most cases it's easier to be with your learners than at home. It's a lot more difficult to teach from home. There are some who feel differently, and so they're taking advantage of it. But you know, the vast majority of teachers are doing just the opposite, you know, trying to find ways to get back in front of their kids as quickly as possible.
I guess as the person who raised this, I would just encourage you to keep a pulse on it, like it sounds like you're doing, just because it's important to keep our kids in the classroom.
Yeah, and I mean, we can, if anyone has some specific recommendations, you can bring them forward next week. And if you want to, we can hold off on the MOA and make adjustments if you have some specific protocols that you'd like to see us exercise.
Dr. Hollister, are we the vaccines, if and when they come here, what, I mean, it's not a mandatory thing that we're doing, right? It's a voluntary, they sign up just like everybody else who has it available to them.
And we did a poll. What was the percentage, okay, Keith? Do you remember offhand?
We had about 50%.
Okay, so we did a poll of faculty real quick, and we do have about 50% who said, yes, I'm definitely in. That doesn't mean the other 50% isn't. Some of them already have them. If they're in the 1A category, you know, we have a handful of folks who already have the vaccine. But, again, we can't mandate that, just like, you know, we just can't.
Is there a fact sheet that we're going to have available to them? I'd like to see that before we even offer it to our faculty, because of what may or may not be on there from the fact sheet we get from whoever we get it from. And I have concerns with what potential risks may be out there, mm-hmm, that we don't tell our faculty, and then something comes back and who knows, because of the trial that it is.
Sure. Yeah. And that's why that's one reason why we don't force it. We don't force them to get flu shots either.
Okay.
Although most do.
Yeah.
But we wouldn't force that.
Okay.
But when we sent out the survey, we did include the a vaccine FAQ that we sent along with it, that we received from Penn Medicine, and that we shared with them. And as Dr. Hollister shared, right now it's just 1A, which is those employees that are at serious health risk, or deal with students that are health risk as well. And that's about 70 total faculty and staff that's included. The 1B is when we get to everybody else. So we're at 1A right now, as Dr. Hollister shared.
Can I get a copy of what we gave them, that fact question thing?
Sure.
Thanks.
Yeah, I'll have, we can send that out to the whole board.
That'd be great. Thanks.
FAQs. Okay.
All right. Any other items?
Where did these come from?
The mugs. Courtesy of the middle school student council, correct?
Middle school student council and art department.
They made them.
They did.
That's
pretty
sweet.
They are homegrown. They are going to be worth a lot of money someday, because they are personal, not mass manufactured. These are they have their own little
stamped, made
each one has its own little personality.
They look great.
So, and that is in honor of Board Appreciation Week. And I apologize to the board. I forgot to mention that last month. January is Board Appreciation Month, and as many have said, you guys have done an amazing job in this time as well. And it's a thankless position, and as you all know, the salary never increases. So keep up the good work. Thank you. Don't go down either, that's true.
10% of nothing gain is still 10% of nothing. All righty. Like Dr. Hollister said, we will be meeting in executive session. That would be in the conference room, I would presume. Right in here. Okay, that works. Like I said, any other items? All right. Hearing none, do I have a motion to close the meeting?
So moved.
Moves. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Meeting is closed till next Monday. Hey, Matt.